My name's Dan, and I'm an addict. I am 35 years old, and I'm 22 months clean. Clean time is not the be all and end all of everything, but I don't know why, but it always helps me to feel a little bit more comfortable. I don't know why it is, but it always helps me to feel a little bit more comfortable, seeing where people are or how far people have come in their recovery. Like recovery is different to clean time, like I'm saying, but I like to get it out there anyway. And I'm really glad to be here with you. I've been in meetings recently. I do a couple of meetings regularly where I occupy service positions. And I've been going to maybe one or two more than I would normally in the past few months. And I've been feeling really funny about it. About sharing. And it's something that I've heard lots of people describe before, where they feel like they have something to say, and then when it's their turn to speak, they don't quite they can't remember what they were about to say, or it doesn't come out right, or you maybe haven't thought about it or something like that. And then you left feeling, oh my God, well, I must have made an awful fool of myself. Surely, everyone thinks I'm silly, and I think I'm a bit silly as well. And so, when I was asked to share here this evening, I thought, "Oh my God!" Well, I'll tell you what happened. My initial reaction was, "Oh my God!" And then I my as we know, if we've been sort of practicing the program as well as it is suggested we do, we'll know that our first thought is often not the right one to go with. And so I sort of stopped and I thought, actually, this is probably exactly what I need for that reason. I'm not feeling there's something about me that isn't quite in balance or in sync or however you want to think about it. And that needs addressing. And probably the best way to address it is to do it, to practice it, to go for it, to sort of step into the thing and see what's going on there. And so that's what I'm here to do. Once I'd had that sort of thought, I thought, yeah, that's good, actually. This is probably exactly what I need. And then I find out I was being asked to speak for 25 minutes. I said, "Oh my God, what the hell am I going to talk about for 25 minutes?" And I went through the same process. Although I'm feeling much more positive after hearing such a wonderful previous share as well, and just sort of being in an NA meeting and having that being that atmosphere of recovery that we talk about, it is still possible over Zoom, simply by connecting with people, being able to see all of your lovely faces and to hear about each other's experiences. It's always a grounding experience for me, and I know, I feel at home, and I know that. I hope that, but in my heart, I really know that if I'm here and I am honest about who I am and where I've been, what my experiences have been, how I found strength and what hopes I have and what hopes I've found along the way, then it will mean something to somebody somewhere, And that's why I love doing service. That's really why I love doing service, is because it means something. It means something to people. I spent almost all of my life thinking that I didn't matter, and what I did didn't mean anything to anybody. I could that no one would really be that bothered if I wasn't there, And it's not that they, I went around. I don't think people thought ill of me. Do you know what I mean? But I was just inconsequential. And And so it's taken me a long time to feel like that. It's taken me a long time to think, oh, what I'm doing here matters and what I'm doing here could be helpful. And why it took such a long time is because I know how much it means to people, because it meant so much to me when I first found NA. Although I live in South London now, and I have done for the last 15 years or so, I'm not from here. I was born in the West Midlands. I was born in Wolverhampton. And the sort of place, the general sort of view of people that live there, or certainly, yeah, actually now and when I was growing up, is quite a pessimistic viewpoint that a lot of people have there. And certainly in my family, there was, it was that, you know, my parents, they tried very hard to give me what they could and to provide a good life for me. And they did so, you know, they did their best to do what they could for me. And, you know, I benefited a lot from it. I certainly wasn't neglected or anything like that. But I wasn't really given good examples of how to express emotion. I wasn't really given good examples of how people kind of worked together to do things. You know, my parents were often at odds, you know, and not necessarily shouting and arguing and you know, all the rest of it, but always a very uncomfortable atmosphere, very often an uncomfortable atmosphere. And I grew up and very quickly sort of realized that, whatever I sort of did or said was scrutinized quite heavily. I was always being second-guessed by my mother in particular. I'm going here, or I'm doing that, or I'm reading this book, or I'm watching this TV show, or I'm listening to this music. She didn't like the music I listened to when I was a teenager. Why do you want to do that? Why would you want to do that for? What wouldn't you rather do something like this instead? And so it's a very, very uncomfortable experience. I sort of learned to not try not to be noticed, you know, and so. Rather than being questioned, rather than people sort of noticing me and then judging me and questioning me, I tried to make a move to like not be in that position. If I wasn't in that position, then I didn't have to deal with that stuff. And, you know, and that's how I grew up, you know, that's what I grew up thinking. And as I got older in my teenager years, it became a real problem for me, because the sort of knock-on effect was I let other people do my thinking for me. Whatever other people wanted to do, wherever they wanted to go. You know, I had people around me. I had friends at school. I knew a couple of people. I had quite a large group of friends, actually. But I didn't want to make any decisions. I didn't want to say anything or do anything or suggest anything because I'd grown up having all those things second guessed, and it didn't make me feel good. The anxiety that came with any potential judgment that people might make of me was too much. And as it went on and as it went on, you know, I decided that anything that sort of slowly manifests the way these things mature and marinate in your mind. I eventually got to the point where I thought, well, I probably don't know what I'm talking about. I probably don't know any kind of suggestion that I make or any kind of action that I have is probably not worth it. It's probably going to make things worse. Actually, I don't really know what I'm doing or who I am or what I'm talking about. And it would be better if I'm not here. You know, that's the kind of projection that it went on. And, it left me feeling that I didn't like myself, you know. And I say today, you know, I am an addict, and I'm not an addict because I had a drug problem. You know, I had a problem with myself. I didn't like myself. I didn't like who I was, and I was scared to death of inflicting myself on other people, because then pretty soon they wouldn't like who I was either. And so I used drugs. And it started off, like many other people I've heard share before, you know, I was quite growing up in a small town with nothing to do. You know, I started drinking with my friends at quite a young age. I started smoking weed, and, you know, and it progressed from there, you know. I didn't like myself. I didn't want to inflict myself on other people. And so those ideas of just sort of going along with the crowd, you know, I eventually moved away. I eventually moved to, I went to university, first of all. Nothing, that's where I sort of learned to pick up class A's, actually. It's where I first used things like MDMA and ecstasy. It's where I found my drug of choice, cocaine. But my attitude didn't really change. I didn't go out to things like freshers parties and stuff like that, and in an effort to make friends like a lot of other people did. All the people I knew, there was one guy there who I went to school with, so obviously ready-made friends there. We were already friends. We knew each other quite well. And I just sort of hung on with anyone he made friends with, anyone that he knew, anyone that he met, any place that he was going or thing that he was doing. I just hung on to them, you know, so I wasn't willing to put myself out there. I was just in the background hoping that someone, you know, might not be totally, you know, disgusted and offended by my presence. But my attitude didn't change. So in that sense, my attitude didn't change. And actually, it just got more and more anxious because, you know, I had a big problem with responsibility as well. I am not good enough to be able to work hard and get a degree. And then, you know, what comes after that? Get a career, buy a house, get married. You know, who am I to do any of that stuff? And so although the attitude didn't change, the responsibility or the perceived responsibility, what I thought my life was and what I thought it should become, was far too weight of a responsibility, far too much of a weight of responsibility. And so the using increased, the kind of drugs that I used increased, the amount of times that I took them, the you know, the lines got bigger and the parties got later, and the behavior got more ridiculous. And the consequences got larger as well. And, you know, far more often I was starting off the night nervous, and then it was, you know, that good part where, you know, you get high. And then, but, you know, far more often I was feeling, you know, the come down was longer and it was harder. And the next day, that feeling of, oh my God, what did I do and where did I go and why did I do those things, was bigger. The problem though, I mean, I say all this and it's true, but the problem though was all of this stuff was, I've learned in retrospect, all of this stuff I've learned looking back on my life. You know, as a sort of white man, especially, you know, I was sort of led to believe, you know, we all have this idea, I think, but as a sort of white man, especially, I've been led to believe that my life was normal. You know, culture around me and the society around me is sort of geared towards me as the standard thing. And so although it was sort of awful and terrible, all of this self-analysis has come in retrospect. At the time, I thought everything was okay. Actually, I thought I'm getting a degree and I'm moving out of home and I'm, you know, I'm having a great party with my friends. This is fine. After I left uni, I moved to South London. I moved to South East London first of all. And I was in a pretty terrible relationship. It was a relationship that I'd been in since I was 17. it was a relationship that I was set to be in for a good while afterwards as well. We were together 10 years in total. We were together till I was 27. And all the things that I described to you before were happening. It was, okay, I've got my degree. I got a terrible 2-2 from a subpar university because I caved in under the pressure of responsibility and I would rather use and not think about it. And then, you know, and then it was time to get a job, but that was too difficult. And it was too much responsibility. And it was time to help support my partner who I'd moved in with. And we were all grown up now and making it big in the big city sort of thing. But no, too much responsibility. And so, you know, the progression occurred. And this happened, you know, I got out of that relationship. I say I got out of it. It was not without its problems. It was not without its arguments and physical and psychological abuse, I don't think is too small a term for it. Still, I had not learned my lesson. Still, I was using. I was so fortunate enough to meet a woman with whom I got into a relationship after that, that cared enough about me to help me. I did not know about NA when I came into the fellowship, but this relationship that I'd got into, I was using cocaine daily, if not every other day, in quite large amounts, and somehow managing to do it in secret as well in this new relationship. I don't know how I was, I don't know how I was never caught, but I was eventually, and that's what brought me to NA. It was a big falling out, obviously a shocking discovery for my partner, but it was a big deal. And she said, "You need help. Why don't you go there?" See, even then, even after this, all of this long, you know, I didn't know how to ask for help. And, you know, I was sort of dragged metaphorically kicking and screaming to NA. But, you know, when I first got there and I'd spent 5 minutes there, like I first described, you know, it's that first hurdle that's the most difficult for me, you know, sort of coming here and sharing with you, like I was saying earlier, you know, once I got there, it was really uncomfortable. I couldn't look anyone in the eye. And I didn't want, but I listened and I saw the people there and it wasn't, I didn't really know what to expect, but I didn't expect that. I didn't expect those people to be there. You know, I had probably the stereotypical image of what a drug addict is in my head, and it was not what was there. I met people who were willing to talk to me, first of all, and seemed to show some kind of interest in me, which, even though they were not the first people in my life, they, you know, with all this sort of happening, I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe this means something. You know, they seemed to show a genuine interest. They were happy. You know, they smiled and talked to each other and greeted each other and weren't trying to get anything off each other, which was another sort of feature of my life. And so, although it was incredibly uncomfortable for me to be there, I liked it. I liked what they had. I liked the way they looked. And I thought, you know, and as I heard them share, you know, they told me, you know, they shared experiences in my life. And, you know, and I heard the things that were familiar to me, some of the things I've described to you this evening and more, you know, I heard them saying, I said, if they did that, and now they look like this a year or two down the line, that's good news for me, you know. And so I stayed, and I did the things that I was told. That's how I've got here. I did the things that I was told. They told me at the end of the meeting to keep coming back, and so I kept coming back. And, you know, and next time I got there, I managed to open my mouth. I knew the name of one or two people that were there, and I was able to say, hello, how are you, you know, which is... sounds insane now, but it was a new experience for me. It's something that I didn't feel like I could do really with conviction, you know what I mean? So I said, I arrived. I said, yeah, how are you? And you know, I had a hug from someone. Someone remembered me from the last week and said, we're so glad that you came back, you know. Acknowledge, thank you. And I managed to open my mouth. And I can't remember exactly what it was. You know, it wasn't anything very meaningful. But, you know, I'm an addict and I'm glad to be back here sort of thing. And they told me to keep going back. And so I kept coming back and I went back again and again and again. And then I said, I was told, you know, as I did and I got more comfortable, I realized they weren't after anything or there wasn't any sort of game to this, you know, and they genuinely cared about who I was. I opened up my mouth a bit more. And I, you know, one of the great things I found through NA and through that practice of sharing is that's how I process things a lot of the time. I talk about them. I've heard someone very recently share about it, actually. You know, you start talking and you get over that initial hurdle. And then all of a sudden you hear yourself saying something and go, that's it. That's what's going on. You know, it just starts, it forms in your mind and then it falls out of your mouth. And then I was told to get a service position. I was told to, you know, hey, you like being here. And you, it was important to you that, it, you know, we remembered you and you wanted to feel welcomed. Why don't you do the same for someone else? That's how it works here. You know, we look after each other. And so I did. I took a greeter position. You know, I stood on the door and I said, hello, how are you? Please come in and join us. You know, I know how much it meant to me. And I was only happy to give that to someone else. I was told to get a sponsor. That was tough, actually. I was about 4, 5, 6 months in before I got a sponsor, which, and maybe it's taken some of you listening to this longer than that, but I was surrounded by people who, and still now it irks me a little bit when I see people that are, like, you know, a couple of weeks or a couple of months clean and they've got themselves a sponsor, and you know, I can deal with that. I know that's out of order, but now, I had to ask a couple of people and be kind of turned down. You know, it was inconvenient or, you know, something like that. Whatever those reasons that people for them gave, it was difficult for me. But it taught me a lesson, you know. I learned to ask for help in that way. I learned to go to people and say, I can't do this by myself. And I need your help. You're someone who knows what they're talking about and is willing to. And you know, it helped me to realize also that people are willing to spend their time with me. You know, it was a tough lesson asking a couple of people, but once I found a sponsor, he was fantastic. He was absolutely would do. You know, I know I can phone him up now any time of day or night, and he will be there because and I matter to him. You know. And I'm just so grateful. I'm just so grateful for that. I said earlier, you know, I grew up feeling like I had a lot of friends. I did know a lot of people, but I didn't really have any friends. And it's only now, not quite 2 years in the fellowship, that I feel like I'm starting to make real friends, like actual friends that I care about and care about me. And that has come through following those suggestions, because following those suggestions has helped me to learn about myself I kept coming back and I learned that people cared about me and remembered me and wanted to know how I was. I kept sharing and then I learned a little bit about myself. I did the steps. And I learned about how, you know, what effect my higher power has in my life, where my higher power is in my life, where I am in my own life. And as I progress through the steps, I'm currently on 9, how other people, where they fit in my life, the people around me in my life. I just, at the moment, I'm doing that every day. I'm remembering God in my life. I'm you know, trying to be active and act appropriately in my own life. And I'm thinking about how I affect the others in my life and how others affect me. So I've come from feeling judged, feeling hard done by, feeling like I absolutely don't matter, to loving myself, caring about myself, having a loving higher power in my life, and caring about the people around me, and really, really, really wanting to make a difference. NA has helped me to get all of those things. NA helps me every day to maintain those things. And I am just ever so grateful every single day for that. And you know, and I'll finish on this, that, you know, that's why the service is good to me. That's why I'm here tonight, to let you and anyone else who hears this know that it works. It does work. If you do the things that you're told, then it works. I will leave it there. Thank you very much.